You eat well, you work out, but did you know 99% of Americans are still mineral deficient? That's where Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder comes in. It's your daily foundation for better mood, natural energy, immune support, and nervous system balance. Formulated from nature and backed by science, it's a simple habit that makes a big impact. Because your body doesn't make minerals, and today's food and water don't supply enough, with Concentrace, you'll feel the difference. Go to tracemineralz.com and start with minerals. Start with Concentrace.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for this episode of Into the Killing. If this is your first episode, thanks for checking it out. You don't have to go back and listen to older episodes, because nearly all the episodes are self-contained. But we'd appreciate it if you went back and listened to them all. Of course, if you've been listening since the beginning, we want to say a big thank you. For this week's episode, we're going back nearly 29 years to May 1993. On May 1st, the president of Sri Lanka was assassinated by a Tamil Tiger suicide bomber. On May 10th, French painter Paul Cézanne's Les Grosses Pommes sold for $28.6 million at auction. On May 18th, the number one movie was the critically panned erotic thriller Sliver, starring Sharon Stone and William Baldwin. The number one song in America was That's the Way Love Goes by Janet Jackson. Inglewood, Colorado is part of the Denver metropolitan area. It's directly south of Denver. In the early 1990s, it had a population of around 30,000 people. It was owned by 5-year-old Alexander Bareilles, who went by the name Allie, her two brothers, and her mother. That spring, the family had moved into the Golden Nugget apartment complex. On the evening of May 18, 1993, Allie and her brothers were playing and eating pizza in the complex's courtyard. Their mother wasn't home, and a neighbor was babysitting them. The babysitter went inside for a few minutes, and when she came back out, Allie was gone. The panicked babysitter looked around the complex for her. When she couldn't find her, she called the police. They started a door-to-door search of the complex. But they didn't find any trace of the 5-year-old girl. They did a door-to-door search of the neighborhood. Again, no trace of Allie was found. The disappearance reminded many people in the area of a kidnapping that happened 2 months earlier in March 1993. 4-year-old Michael Chandler was at a church in southeast Denver. He was in the church's nursery, and he stepped outside to get a drink of water when he was kidnapped. About 15 hours later, he was found walking beside the interstate. Michael said that a big man in a truck had dropped him off. He said that the man had a mustache all over his face. Michael was in relatively good shape physically, but he was quite dirty. So people were hoping that Allie would turn up alive as well. But tragically, that didn't happen. Allie's mother, Maribel, told the police that Allie needed to be found because she had severe asthma, and without her medication, she would die. That information was made public, hoping that the kidnapper would release her. But the police received no information that led to the girl. The police were able to clear Maribel and her boyfriend as suspects. They also cleared Allie's biological father as a suspect because he had an airtight alibi. 3 days after Allie went missing, the police brought a bloodhound named Yogi to the apartment complex. Humans and animals leave scent trails made from thousands of dead skin cells that we shed. Bloodhounds amazingly can smell these cells for up to a month unless severe weather sweeps them away. They can even track someone in a vehicle via skin cells coming out of the ventilation and exhaust systems. When Unsolved Mysteries did a segment on Allie's disappearance, Yogi's handler said, "We've even done scenarios in training where we'll put a person in a sealed trunk and they can still pick it up. His world is his nose." Yogi sniffed some clothes that Allie had recently worn and then he went to work. First, he went to Allie's apartment. And then he led the handler out of the complex and down the road. When tracking someone on foot, the scent is usually more direct so Yogi usually follows a straight path. But when tracking someone in a car, the skin cells will spread out more, so he'll walk between the edge of the road and any buildings that might be on the side of the road. Yogi's handler immediately knew that Allie had been taken in a car. Yogi tracked the scent for several miles, leading to the freeway. The handler then drove Yogi to the next exit, and Yogi indicated that Allie had stayed on the freeway. They kept driving to freeway exits and getting out to see if Yogi would pick up Allie's scent. But after the third one, they thought that the kidnapper may have been traveling far away, so they decided to skip the fourth exit and stopped at the fifth. It was immediately clear that Yogi couldn't pick up the scent, so they had gone too far. They drove back to the fourth exit, and Yogi found more of Allie's skin cells. Yogi led his handler off the freeway to an area called Deer Creek Canyon. At this point, Yogi had covered about 14 miles in 7 hours, and he was getting tired. So his handler decided to stop for the day.
Missing minerals? 99% of us are. Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder helps restore what your body's missing, naturally supporting mood, energy, and immunity. Get yours now at TraceMinerals.com. Feel off, tired, moody? You might be missing minerals because 99% of us are. Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder helps support energy, mood, and immunity from the inside out. Go to TraceMinerals.com and feel the difference minerals make.
The next day, in Deer Creek Canyon, less than 2 miles from where Yogi was forced to stop, searchers discovered the dead body of 5-year-old Allie Bareilles. She had been stuffed into a green army duffel bag. The cause of death was inconclusive. The medical examiner thought that her extreme asthma had contributed to her death. The medical examiner could not determine if she had been sexually assaulted. The police had several promising leads, and they all led to one person, 33-year-old Nick Stouffer. Stouffer had lived in the same apartment complex as Allie and her family. He lived across the courtyard from where Allie was last seen playing. Allie's 3-year-old brother said that an old man had taken Allie. He led the detectives to the apartment where the old man lived. It was Stouffer's apartment. Also, a second bloodhound led their handler to Stouffer's apartment. Stouffer had just moved into his apartment a few weeks before the kidnapping. Then on the day Allie's body was found, he suddenly moved out. In fact, he fled the state and moved to California. He had skipped work on the day after Allie went missing. 2 days later, he borrowed a car from a friend. A friend who had helped Stouffer move said he had a green army duffel bag. Stouffer was questioned, and he denied that he owned a green army bag. Inside the bag where Allie's body was found, the police found metal shavings and carpet fibers. At the time of the kidnapping, Stouffer worked as a welder. The carpet fibers matched the carpet in Stouffer's apartment. When the police were conducting a door-to-door search of the apartment complex, Stouffer didn't answer his door. The police believe that Stouffer was inside his apartment with Allie when the officers knocked on his door. After Stouffer moved to California, the police in Inglewood had him extradited back to Colorado over an outstanding ticket for drinking and driving. In custody, they collected hair and blood samples. But beyond that, nothing else was done. The district attorney felt that all the evidence was circumstantial, and nothing definitively proved that Stouffer killed Allie. So the case went cold. Over the years, several detectives would look at the case to see if there was any way they could close it. In January 2011, one detective read over the case, and she was convinced that Nick Stouffer had killed Allie. So she had Allie's clothes and the duffel bag sent to the crime lab to be examined for DNA. 7 months later, the results came back. male DNA had been found in Allie's underwear. It was compared to the DNA from the prime suspect, Nick Stouffer. It was a match. In September 2011, the police said that after 18 years, the murder of Allie Bareilles was officially solved. However, Nick Stouffer would never face justice for the murder. 10 years earlier, on October 7, 2001, the police were called to do a welfare check on Stouffer at his apartment in Phoenix, Arizona. He was dead from an apparent drug overdose. He was 41 years old. Many people have wondered if Stouffer also kidnapped Michael Chandler. 4-year-old Michael was kidnapped from a church in southeast Denver about 2 months before Allie went missing. All Michael said about his kidnapper was that he was a big man with a truck who had a mustache all over his face. Stouffer had a large, bushy mustache at the time of the kidnapping. Michael and his family moved away from Colorado in 2005. When Stouffer was identified as Allie's kidnapper, Michael was shown a photograph of Stouffer, but he didn't recognize him. In the fall of 2011, Michael was a college senior. After graduating, he planned to start his own web marketing and design business. Michael does not talk to the media. His family still holds out hope that one day his case will be solved as well.
You eat well, you work out, but did you know 99% of Americans are still mineral deficient? That's where Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder comes in. It's your daily foundation for better mood, natural energy, immune support, and nervous system balance. Formulated from nature and backed by science, it's a simple habit that makes a big impact. Because your body doesn't make minerals, and today's food and water don't supply enough. With Concentrace, you'll feel the difference. Go to tracemineralz.com and start with minerals. Start with Concentrace.
For our next story, we're going back to December 1980. On December 1st, the cable channel Bravo launched. 3 days later, Portugal's prime minister was killed in a plane crash. That same day, there was a fire at the Stouffer's Inn at Harrison, New York hotel. The hotel had several conference rooms, and that day, they were hosting several meetings. 13 of the top executives of Arrow Electronics Corporation and 11 executives of Nestle USA Incorporated were killed in the blaze. On December 7, 1980, the top movie in the United States was the space opera Flash Gordon, based on the comic strip of the same name. The song at the top of the Billboard charts was Lady by country megastar Kenny Rogers. The song was written by another future superstar, Lionel Richie. 6-year-old Alexander Glanz and his mother, Diane Glanz, lived in Richmond, Virginia. In late November 1980, Alex's babysitter quit. So Alex and his mother decided that when Alex got home from school at 3 p.m., he would let himself inside and then call his mother immediately. He would then stay in the house until she got home at about 5 p.m. On December 7, 1980, Alex attended school, and then the bus dropped him off. But that afternoon, he did not call his mother. It had only been 10 days since the babysitter quit, so Diane understood that her 6-year-old son may have forgotten to call her. When Diane got home, she found Alex's keys in the door, and his backpack was just behind the front door. Diane thought that maybe the cat got outside when Alex opened the door, so he went out looking for it. An hour passed, and it became dark. Alex still hadn't come home. So Diane called the police. Massive, around-the-clock searches were conducted for the boy. On the morning of December 9, 1980, many Americans woke up to some shocking news. Late the night before, 40-year-old John Lennon had been murdered by a loner named Mark David Chapman. The assassination of the former Beatle was of little concern to Diane Glanz, whose only son was still missing. The next day, two men were hunting deer in a wooded area in Hanover, Virginia, just a few miles from Alex's home. They came across the partially dressed body of a young boy. He was only wearing his socks and underwear. His wrists and ankles had been bound. Due to the state of the remains, dental records were needed to identify the body. The body of 6-year-old Alex Glanz had been found. The medical examiner determined that Alex had been sexually assaulted and beaten. The cause of death was exposure, meaning he had froze to death. Although Alex had been missing for 3 days, he had only been dead for about 36 hours. Unfortunately, no progress was made on the case in the days or weeks after the murder. Then in May 1981, a promising suspect emerged. On May 18, 1981, two sisters, 15-year-old Leanne Sutton and 10-year-old Kelly Sutton, were home alone in Hanover. A man knocked on their door and told them that his truck wasn't working. He was wondering if he could use their phone. The girls let him inside. Once inside, he overpowered them and forced them to get into his truck. A few hours later, two boys who were playing in some woods came across Kelly Sutton. She was tied to a tree. She told the boys that she and her sister had been kidnapped. The kidnapper had taken her sister deep into the woods. The boys untied Kelly and told her to come with them. But Kelly refused to leave without her older sister. Suddenly, the kidnapper emerged from the woods. The boys both ran, but Kelly didn't. The kidnapper dragged her back into the woods. The boys rushed home and told their parents about what they had experienced. Their parents called the sheriff's department. Sheriff's deputies were already at the girls' home because their parents had reported them missing. Deputies descended on the woods, but no trace of Kelly and Leanne were found. For 24 hours, searches were conducted all over Hanover. One deputy was searching some woods about 5 miles away from where the girls were last seen. He saw a 20-year-old high school dropout named John Bradley Crawford walking out of the woods. The deputy knew Crawford. Just over a year earlier, in March 1980, Crawford had been charged with sexually assaulting a 4-year-old boy. Apparently, Crawford had been at the boy's home to do some extermination work. He lured the boy under the house and then sexually assaulted him. Crawford took a polygraph exam and claimed he didn't sexually assault the boy, and it was determined that he was not telling the truth. But the charges against him were dismissed. The sheriff's deputy thought it was odd that Crawford would be walking out of the woods because he didn't live in that area. So he searched the area where Crawford had emerged out of the woods. He found the Sun sisters tied to two different trees. They were taken to the hospital and treated for mild hypothermia. They also had several cuts and bruises. It's not believed that they were sexually assaulted. Crawford was arrested and charged with abduction with intent to defile. In 1982, he pleaded guilty and he was sentenced to 50 years in prison. The police thought that there were enough similarities between the kidnapping of the Sun sisters and Alex Glanz. They were all kidnapped from their homes. They were all taken to a wooded area where they were tied up and then abandoned. But the police were wondering if there was any connection between Crawford and Alex. It turned out that the day Alex was kidnapped, a neighbor saw a black and red pickup truck parked in their driveway. The neighbor thought it was some type of work truck. Alex's mother, Diane, rented the house. It turned out that the landlord had a contract with a company called Crawford Exterminating to have the house sprayed yearly. The company was owned by a couple, and they had a son, 20-year-old John Bradley Crawford. The company had a red and black pickup truck, but had not been seen since Alex went missing. The detectives concluded that Crawford kidnapped Alex just as he got home, then he dumped him in the woods or nearby field, Alex tried to crawl or hop to a nearby road to get help, but tragically, he never made it there. While the police had a promising suspect, Crawford wasn't charged with anything. There are several theories as to why he wasn't. One was that he was already serving 50 years in prison. Another possibility is that Crawford's mother was good friends with the sheriff and she may have influenced him. Whatever the reason, it bothered the two detectives who worked on the case that no charges were brought against Crawford. Nearly two decades went by. Then in 2000, the two detectives who originally worked the case went to the new district attorney. They asked him to look at the case to see if they could have Crawford charged with Alex's murder. A few months later, the detectives asked the Hanover Cold Case Unit to investigate the case. In 2003, the district attorney's office and the Cold Case Unit started working together. They had the evidence sent to the crime lab. They wanted to see if they could find any DNA evidence. They also wanted to see if any of the evidence had chemicals on it that were used in the extermination industry. They also had knot expert compare the knots used to tie up Alex and the Sun sisters. In September 2006, they felt they had enough evidence, so they charged Crawford with Alex's murder. Crawford had behaved in prison, so he had shaved off a lot of time from his sentence. When he was charged with Alex's murder, he was just 22 days shy of being released for kidnapping the Sun sisters. John Crawford went to trial in March 2007. None of his DNA was found on Alex. Instead, the basis of the prosecution's case was that he kidnapped the Sun sisters. The kidnapping was so similar to Alex's kidnapping that it had to be committed by the same person. A knot expert said that the same knots were used when tying up Alex and the Suddens. Also, chemicals that Crawford's family's business used were found on the clothes and the ligatures of all three victims. The trial ended in a mistrial because the jury couldn't reach a unanimous decision. Crawford went to trial again a year later in March 2008. Once again, it ended in a hung jury. Crawford went to trial for a third time in November 2008. The jury deliberated for 6 hours over 2 days. This time they found Crawford guilty of first-degree murder and abduction with intent to defile. The jury recommended terms of 35 years for each conviction. The conviction came down just a day shy of the 28th anniversary of the day that Alex's body was found. In February 2009, the judge accepted the jury's recommendation and sentenced 47-year-old Crawford to 70 years in prison. At the time of this recording, 61-year-old John Bradley Crawford is serving his sentence at the Buckingham Correctional Center in Buckingham County, Virginia. His projected release date is May 2042. If he lives that long, he'll be 81 years old. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Don't forget to check out our new channel, Paranormally Listed. You can find it at youtube.com/paranormallylisted. Of course, we still have our original true crime channel, Criminally Listed. We have nearly 350 videos featuring bizarre but true crime stories. You can find it at youtube.com/criminallylisted. But that's all for today. Thanks again for listening.